Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you all and welcome to DW's Africa Link program with me, Isaac Mugabe, your host in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Zimbabwean political activists welcome a ruling by the High Court which nullified a police ban on protests.
We have suffered in the hands of this dictator. We cannot be seen a police officer creating law. Which law should be created by Parliament?
We are also just happy that at least the judge in this case that was before the court was able to assert that principle of separation of powers.
And in business, Cameroonian consumers are now turning to European markets for second-hand electronics and furniture instead of new ones from China. We hear why.
I prefer second-hand goods from Europe and America because of the quality and because of the duration.
Stay tuned for these stories plus another installment of our Learning by Ear series.
Top story.
Zimbabwe's High Court ruled on Wednesday that a two-week ban by police on protests was illegal. The court has given the government 1 week to explain why it wanted to stop citizens from holding peaceful demonstrations as stipulated in the constitution. Political activists had said the move violated their rights. Police in the Southern African nation issued an official notice last Thursday prohibiting all demonstrations in the capital, Harare, after anti-government protests descended into some of the worst violence seen in two decades. From Harare, Privilege Mushaniri sent this report.
High Court Judge Priscilla Chigumba ruled that the official police notice issued last week was invalid and therefore suspended. This comes after Zimbabwe witnessed some of the worst public protests, which ended with violence. Judge Chigumba gave the state 7 days to give reasons why the ban should be upheld and that authorities must observe the law before imposing any sanction on the right for a peaceful demonstration. Speaking to journalists, lawyer Tendai Biti, who represented the activists, said the police commander who issued the notice had no authority to violate the constitution.
The judgment is a very brave judgment in respect of which the court asserted judicial independence. And more importantly, that the courts will adjudicate matters without fear and favor, because that's what the constitution says so. On the merits, we're very pleased that the court was able to say that statutory instrument 101A of 2016 was unconstitutional.
Political activists had challenged the ban, saying the police had no authority to stop citizens from exercising their constitutional right to stage peaceful demonstrations as guaranteed by the country's constitution. One of the activists who has led several protests in the last 4 months, Sten Zorwadza, said the ban, which has now been nullified, was cruel in the first place. He has vowed to continue protesting against President Mugabe's government.
The ZRP ban against demonstrations is a barbaric ban. We have suffered in the hands of this dictator. We cannot be seen a police officer creating law. Which law should be created by Parliament? We are very upset and will continue.
Addressing the ruling ZANU-PF youth wing recently, President Mugabe accused judges of being reckless in allowing anti-government demonstrations that later turned violent despite police resistance. In an interview with DW, Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights Project Manager, International Litigation, Lobby and Advocacy Zimbabwe Chimbwa applauded the High Court ruling, adding that President Mugabe's attack on the judiciary was unsavory.
I find the attacks by the president against the judiciary regrettable because of the principle of separation of powers. We are also just happy that at least the judge in this case that was before the court was able to assert that principle of separation of powers.
Zimbabwe has seen an upsurge in public demonstrations against the government. The demonstrations have often ended violently with accusations of police brutality. Nearly 70 people have been arrested in the protests.
Privilege Mushaniri in Harare. Now, social media platforms like Facebook and WhatsApp continue to play a critical role in Zimbabwe's protests and calls for change. This has led to a formation of a platform known as Mobile Community Zimbabwe. It is a citizen journalism initiative that reports stories which wouldn't normally be covered in media that is predominantly state-controlled. This report by Christine Mundwa is now presented by Christina Kripal.
Social media has emboldened Zimbabweans to stand up to their government. This newfound platform is seen as a threat to President Robert Mugabe's grip on power. Natasha Muzonza is from Mobile Community Zimbabwe. She explains what exactly they do.
We train young people, young Zimbabweans, to use mobile phones to tell stories from their communities. And we use open source software on mobiles. And they tell stories from their communities in different formats, audio, video, or still pictures.
Zimbabwe's government is tightening the news on the use of social media. It recently hiked data prices by up to 500%, making services such as WhatsApp difficult for many to use. Also, as Muzonza explains, mobile phone operators have been ordered to suspend data promotions.
And that was the way that the majority of Zimbabweans were accessing the internet. And without that, a lot of people will not then be able to download even a 10 megabyte size video, you know, because, I mean, bread and butter issues come first. And in an economy such as this one, where people are trying to keep body and soul together, I mean, yeah, that $1 goes a long way doing something else.
The data price increase comes as Zimbabweans are growing increasingly frustrated with the government's handling of a failing economy, prompting demonstrations, many of them coordinated on social media. In response, the ruling party has drafted new legislation, the Computer Crime and Cybercrime Bill. Analyst Fadzai Mahere, an advocate of the Supreme Court, says this will definitely stifle dissent.
The problems with the law don't end there. The law also allows the police, with a warrant, sometimes without, to just storm a person's home or their office and seize their computer, their electronic devices, including a smartphone, a cell phone, and take it and go through all that information and look for whatever they're looking for and look at things that they're not entitled to look at in severe breach of a person's right to privacy.
Under Mugabe's 36-year rule, Zimbabwe has long had a tradition of crushing dissent. As the country heads into an election season, the crackdown on the streets and on the web is expected to intensify.
A report by Christine Mondwa.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
And in case you've just joined us on this DW's Africa Link program, welcome. Now, in just a period of 5 months, Malawi's President Peter Mutharika has reshuffled his cabinet twice. This comes amid growing pressure from donors for Malawi to have a lean cabinet in view of the prevailing economic challenges. Mutharika merged and renamed some key ministries. DW correspondent Irene Longwe George Muhango has been telling me how Malawians have been reacting and whether the changes will woo back the donor community.
Malawians are completely shocked. Why? Because instead of trimming the number of ministerial positions or departments, what has happened is that it's just a matter of renaming them. For example, the Ministry of Civic Education, Culture and Community Development, this did not exist. But all these three components of civic education did appear in other ministries because the Ministry of Information used to have the bearing of civic education. So what this means definitely to a local person on the ground is that the same faces of ministers and the same departments, but of course with some sugarcoating somewhere somehow.
Are there changes more to do with politics or are they about performance?
Purely these are to do with politics. Why? Because recently, there have been a number of activities or happenings on the ground pertaining to the ruling Democratic Progressive Party internally and externally, because the outgoing British High Commissioner to Malawi did call on the government to ensure that there is an improvement in the way ministers or various departments deliver their services. You might wish to know that water is a problem, electricity is a problem. All these are parastatals of the government. So service delivery has been very poor, going down. And indeed, that is why there have been some kind of changes or realignment of departments, maybe removing the sports ministry itself to be a department within the Ministry of Manpower, Labour and Youth. So you can imagine that even the sports ministry itself used to have a number of funding allocation, but still more, they were not even enough to ensure that the sporting disciplines blossom in the country. So it's about performance-based and then, to some extent, politics.
Will these changes be enough to convince donors to resume lending?
I don't think so, because the major issue currently that is hot or talk of the nation is that of the public plunder of financial resources belonging to a taxpayer. You may wish also to know that about $150 million was suspended or withheld by donors then sitting as common budget approach, you see. So all those kind of things, definitely the signal to the fact that still more, the current government has to do more beyond the renaming or merging of various ministerial departments.
George Muhango. We now head to Cameroon, where retailers are now turning to European markets for textiles and electronic gadgets. This has left many products from China without buyers due to their supposedly inferior quality compared to those from Europe. Majority consumers in Cameroon now prefer ordering, in particular from Germany, when it comes to buying electronic appliances. From Yaoundé, Mokinzeka sent this report.
Hundreds of youths shout at the top of their voices to advertise second-hand dresses for sale at the Mokolo market in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. This market also supplies most of the second-hand dresses from America and Europe sold all over Cameroon, Chad, Gabon, and the Central African Republic. Among the buyers is 21-year-old Bimila Hans, who has just been recruited as a secondary school teacher in Yaoundé.
I prefer second-hand goods from Europe and America because of the quality and because of the duration. European and American goods look very, very expensive. But when you're someone who knows what you want, you better go in for what is expensive and which will last long, rather than going in for what is cheap.
Not far from the market is a line of 50 tailors and seamstresses. They cut and stitch the dresses to the sizes of buyers. University student Ayompe Rosaline has just handed a jacket and trousers to a tailor.
In case I see something which I really like and it's big, I buy it. I try to reduce it to my size.
Cameroon's customs officer Christelle Njok says a more than 50% increase in second-hand goods imported to Cameroon has been reported within the past 5 years.
Parfois, ce sont les gars d'ici qui ont les frères en Europe ou les amis.
Sometimes people who have brothers or friends in Europe ask them to collect disposed of goods and send them to them specially because they believe that Europeans only use their electronic appliances for a short period, like 6 months or a year, and then buy new ones. Relatives in Europe give people traveling back home two or three appliances to carry along so as to avoid paying custom duties. That's why such goods are less expensive.
I also asked her where the preferred second-hand goods come from.
The most cherished electronics and electrical appliances are from Germany. I do not know if they are the best manufacturers, but their products are solid. Chinese wares are not very good. They look good, but they never last.
Critics say the trade hurts the fragile domestic market. There have been calls for the sale of imported second-hand goods to be banned.
Moki Kinzeka in Yaoundé. It's now time to sit back and listen to another segment of our ongoing drama series on migration, a production by Learning by Ear team.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Greetings and welcome to Learning by Ear. This is the 13th episode of this ongoing radio drama about modern migration by Africans to Europe called The Promised Land. We've been following the lives of Linda, Farahani, and Chivasi, and we've seen that although Europe offers many opportunities for study and self-development, there are also many negative aspects, especially if one migrates there illegally. In the previous episode, Linda was shocked to discover that Charles, the stranger she married so she could get a work permit, was in fact Florence's ex-husband, and that the two of them co-owned the nightclub where Florence got her a job. But she's still thinking of dropping out of university to work more hours because she desperately needs money to help pay her father's hospital bill. At the detention center, where immigration officials have started to hear people's applications for asylum, Farahani was the first to go in and Chivasi was last. Will they succeed in getting refugee status in Europe? Stay tuned for today's episode called Under the Radar. Let's join Chivasi as he tells his story to the immigration official.
So, you're the new daredevil.
Daredevil? I don't understand. What do you mean by that, sir?
Well, you managed to sneak on board of one of our ships that was delivering food aid to Africa and make your way to Europe as a stowaway. I can't remember the last time I interviewed someone who'd done that. That makes you a bit of a hero, don't you think?
No, sir, I don't. I think it was one of the scariest things I've ever done in my life.
Oh, really? Why is that? You made it all the way to Europe undetected, and compared to most illegals who arrive in small boats, your journey must have been quite luxurious. Do you have any money with you?
Money? You mean money as in euros?
Not just euros. Cash in any currency. Do you have any?
Yes, well, I used to. I have a little money, yes, but not enough because I have to support a big family.
You have a family? Are you married? Do you have children?
No, I'm not married yet. I have a few... I have brothers and sisters.
A family and a fiancé, eh? You don't fit the refugee profile. How come you want to be given asylum?
Back home we had elections, and after that, there were clashes between the different ethnic groups. I fled the violence because they were targeting people from my ethnic background.
Oh. And what about your family? Aren't you afraid their lives might be in danger too?
No. I mean, yes. I'm scared for them, but I know they're fine.
How do you know that?
How? I saw them.
Before you came?
Yes.
Okay, so you said that after the elections, there were some religious clashes. Why is that?
I don't know. We've always had this problem.
What problem? I don't understand.
This religious conflict.
I thought it was ethnic.
Ethnic? Yes. Ethnic and religious.
Thank you. That's enough. I'm sorry, but I don't believe that you qualify for asylum.
Huh?
Your story is inconsistent, and it seems to me that you have other reasons for coming to Europe illegally.
No.
I am rejecting your application, and you'll be deported back to Africa as soon as possible.
But how can that be? I've told you.
That'll be all for now.
There's nothing Chivasi can do but get up and walk slowly back to his room at the detention center. He's failed the test, and now he's officially awaiting deportation. But will he accept it? Meanwhile, Linda, Florence, and Charles are taking a break at the nightclub.
How's your father doing, Linda? Have you had any news?
Yes, the operation was successful, and the doctor says he's making good progress.
Right, that's cool. Now, when you leave university and come and work with us full-time, things will only get better. In a few years, the immigration department will grant you a residence permit, and you can do whatever you want.
I still can't believe it. This is all like a dream to me.
Police! Everybody freeze! Nobody leave the room!
What the hell is going on here? Huh? What's that?
You must be Florence. And this is your ex-husband Charles, isn't it? I believe you're the owners of this club.
That's correct. Yeah.
And this young lady must be Linda Maraga, a university student, currently married to Charles. Am I right?
Yes. Is there a problem, officer?
We've been investigating the two of you for a long time now. You're both under arrest on suspicion of organizing fake marriages between Europeans and Africans to help them acquire European citizenship, and of forcing them to work in your club, thereby exploiting them and denying them their basic human rights. Once we present the evidence that the marriage between Linda and Charles is a sham, it will be annulled by the court. And as for you, Miss Maraga, We don't know whether you agreed to this scam of your own free will or whether you were forced into the marriage. I don't know how deeply you're involved, but there isn't enough evidence against you. You're free to go.
Officer, I swear I don't know what you're talking about. This must be a misunderstanding, eh?
Hey, Charles, relax. We are simply under suspicion. That means we are innocent until proven guilty. I don't see any evidence to show that we committed any crime either. So, let's do as the officer asks and follow him, okay?
Okay.
Come on now, breakfast. Come on.
Linda watches in fear and horror as Florence and Charles are led out of the club in handcuffs. Elsewhere, at the detention center for illegal migrants, Chivasi confides in Farahani, who, after his second interview, is now almost certain that he'll be granted asylum. Farahani has an idea as to what Chivasi should do next.
You're sure he told you that you definitely wouldn't get asylum?
Yes, he told me he didn't believe me. He said I contradicted myself and that in a few days they're going to send me back.
Back? Is that what you want? To go back to Africa? Because if you really want to stay, there's only one way out for you now.
What? What is it? I came all this way. I have to finish what I started. I have to see Linda. Tell me, what must I do?
Now you know you won't get asylum. You need to sleep under the radar.
Under the radar?
Yep.
You mean live here undetected?
Exactly. It's dangerous. But I know someone who knows someone. And if you tell him I sent you, he'll help you. But first, you'll have to escape from this detention center. I've been thinking a lot about how I could get out if my application was rejected. And I think I know a way.
Farahani quickly briefs Chivasi on where to go and what to do. A few hours later, Chivasi is waiting outside the main building inside the detention center when a delivery van pulls up. As soon as the driver is looking the other way, Chivasi wriggles underneath and clings to the undercarriage with all his might. Now the van is racing through the European streets, heading into the big city.
Why did I come here? Must be out of my mind. I had everything I needed at home. Ugh. Linda, I hope you're waiting for me. I'll be with you soon. All this pain because of you. No, I can't hold on much longer. I have to jump now. It's now or never. Ah! Oh, my back! My back!
Hey, are you all right? Oh no, you're bleeding. We need to call an ambulance. Wait, where are you going?
No, please, no ambulance, no police. I'll be okay. Excuse me, is this the capital? Can you tell me how I can get to the university?
The capital? Oh no, that's a long way away. Listen, my name is Rhoda. I live nearby. Why don't you come with me if you don't go to hospital? I can treat your wounds and then you'll be on your way.
No, thank you. Hey, careful. Please. No, thank you.
No. This way. Follow me.
I need to go. I'm running out of time. I have to go.
No, not in that condition. You're bleeding. And you look like you could do with a hot bath and maybe some food. Come with me, please. I think I know what you're going through. I promise I won't do anything to hurt you, okay? I'm just going to be a good Samaritan.
Oh, no. Too late. The police are coming for me.
Hey, don't panic. Take my arm now. Walk with me.
Will Chivasi manage to dodge the police? Even if he succeeds, he has no money and no papers. How will he ever find Linda? And what about Farahani? If he's granted asylum, does that mean all his problems are solved? Join us next time for the answers to these questions and more in the following episodes of our radio drama series, The Promised Land. For now, we invite you to visit our online discussion forum at facebook.com/DW.LBE to share your opinions on what life is like for illegal migrants who have to live under the radar. Take care.
And before we leave you, a reminder of some of the stories that we've covered for you in the last 25 minutes. Zimbabwe's High Court has ruled that a two-week ban by police on protests was illegal. Cameroonian consumers turned to European markets for electronics and furniture instead of China, as was the case before. We've also been hearing what the cabinet reshuffle in Malawi means. If you'd like to comment on these or other recent stories, please send an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to Africa Link DW531110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 49160957 59510. I'll be back at the same time tomorrow. And this is Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.